Support for WPR comes from the Dram Corporation, manufacturers of commercial tools, equipment, and systems for greenhouse and nursery professionals for over 80 years. More information is at dramm.com.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to start our program today by talking with you about some new FDA, Food and Drug Administration regulations requiring supplement manufacturers to follow good manufacturing practices. Now, you'd have thought that might have been the case already.
Wouldn't you?
Wenja Zunitsky, UW Extension Professor of Nutritional Sciences, our guest today to talk about these regulations and certainly to answer your questions as well as we move along today. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890 and anywhere else toll free at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Sue, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Great to be here, Larry.
You'd have thunk that that would be the case. And I'm wondering how many consumers are actually aware that supplements are much more lenient in terms of rules and regulations than other products.
Well, I don't have the data with me, but I've seen surveys over and over again that show that people are really confused about what's the difference between how a food is regulated, how a drug is regulated, and how a supplement is regulated. And historically, supplements were regulated more like drugs in that they had to prove their safety and that they did something, their efficacy. Mm-hmm. But the current regulations that have been in effect over 10 years, I think it was 1994, DSHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, really changed all the rules. And Congress at that time was very much in the mood to say, you know what, if they're not hurt anybody, leave them alone. Mm-hmm. So they shifted what's called the burden of proof from the manufacturers to the FDA. And then, of course, didn't give FDA enough money to do a whole lot about that. So it depends on who you talk to. It's been very controversial. There's lots of money involved. There's lots of personal passion involved from consumers. People seem to want the freedom to take supplements as they wish. Thank you very much. And that usually works out fine, but there are instances where it doesn't. The DSHEA rule that I said over 10 years old did require FDA to establish good manufacturing practices, you know, kind of a set of standards for purity and cleanliness and, keeping out contaminants and that sort of thing. And they worked with the industry and experts, and they proposed a set of regulations, three or four years ago. But it took this long for them to actually publish what they call a final rule. And that rule won't even actually go into effect and be enforced for about another year for big companies and another 2 or 3 years for small companies. So, you know, this is definitely a work in progress. And back to your original question, most of the people I talk to really have a hard time keeping all this straight about what's a supplement, how is it different from other drugs, and do I really have to be more careful when I'm picking out my supplements than if I'm, you know, going to... let's say, pick out an over-the-counter medicine for my sniffles.
Well, now, as I was introducing the program, I mentioned contamination problems. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned bacteria and pesticides, lead, glass, others. I mean, have those actually been found in...
Well, there's a testing organization called Consumer Lab. They have a website called consumerlab.com. And they claim to have found contaminants in several supplements. That's their main business is to test products. And then they have some sort of claim that you can make that they've tested your products and not found anything wrong if you pay a certain amount of money. So, this is a commercial operation. But they have found contaminants, including lead, in several supplement products. And if you are a member of their organization, you can go to their website and find the details on that. If you're an ordinary consumer who hasn't kind of joined into mm-hmm. their society, you can still find a lot of good information on their website about what they've found in generalities for safety of and contamination issues with various products. So it's just www.consumerlab.com.
Now, can dietary supplements then go to market without ever having proven their safety to the FDA?
Yes, that was one of the provisions of this new rule. There, dietary supplements are regulated more like food. Like, if you can just assume if they've been around a long time, they're, you know, we don't have to go through all those millions of dollars worth of tests and mountains of paperwork and lawyers and all that stuff. You can just market it, but the law says that the company has to be assured that it's safe, but they don't actually have to get FDA approval that it's been met FDA standards of safety before they can actually put it on the market.
I would think then, I mean, I would assume or would hope anyway that healthcare providers would be up to date on supplements.
Well, I guess you want the phones to ring, Larry. I think, pardon that cynical comment, but healthcare providers, like other issues, some of them are really, you know, chapter and verse up on all of these issues, and some of them really haven't kept up with them. You know, healthcare providers don't write prescriptions for dietary supplements like they do for prescription drugs, obviously. So their sense of involvement with knowledge about all the various dietary supplements varies. I've talked to physicians who are very knowledgeable and others who are pretty blasé about mm-hmm. that. So I think consumers, including the people listening to the radio right now, you know, really have to take a buyer beware attitude and not assume that your doctor or pharmacist or dietitian or nurse or whoever you get a lot of your medical advice from knows or doesn't know. But, you know, ask some pretty telling questions to find out what their interest level and knowledge level is and then what they'd recommend if it's a little lacking. And also, you know, be questioning of the manufacturers. If you're really interested in a certain supplement, if you can buy it at the local pharmacy, then, you know, quiz the pharmacist about it. Knowing, of course, that they're selling the product, but still they, mm-hmm. I think, usually feel an obligation to help you make a good decision. If it's from a private seller, especially somebody, you know, selling these things to their friends and that sort of thing, that to me triggers a whole nother level of caution and asking really well-informed questions.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, I know my own doctor, when I go in to see my doctor, he always asks what I'm taking for, mm-hmm. if I'm taking supplements and what I'm actually taking. But if you think about supplements and even over-the-counter medications, you can run into some problems by taking something that seems perfectly fine.
You can take the wrong product. You can actually make your condition worse that you're trying to take it for. You can take the wrong amount. You know, you can. There's lots of ways to sort of mess up. And I don't want to sound scary and gloom and doom. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, people take some supplements and either get a benefit or you know, it's a wash.
Not
it's
hurt.
Not hurting anything. But there have been instances, especially a lot of expert organizations have advice out there about supplements, including the Food and Drug Administration. And they say be especially careful to work with your healthcare provider if you're going to have any kind of surgery, especially if you're going to, you know, be under anesthesia, because certain supplements can affect how well the anesthetic works or how likely you are to bleed real easily. So, you may or may not. I would, of course, recommend that you talk to your doctor or healthcare provider about the supplements you're taking. Some people are reluctant to do that, but don't be reluctant to do that if you're about to have surgery. They need to know.
If you'd like to join in, give us a call. Here's the number. We're talking, by the way, the supplements and FDA regulations requiring supplement manufacturers to follow good practices. 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And let's take a call. Mike in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've worked in in FDA-regulated positions for a long time, including drug testing. And the GMP really is addressing two areas of the parent law, if you will. One is safety and the other is efficacy. Now, as your guest has highlighted, because of the recent regulation in, about 10 years ago, efficacy is really not in question here. But it doesn't take away from the government's responsibility under acts going back 100 years or more to assure safety. And it's that safety angle, which is a significant portion of the GMP. So in other words, assuring that the product is not adulterated. So if we want to say that, you know, we're not going to question whether St. John's wort is efficacious for whatever the person wants to apply it to, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be concerned about adulteration. For instance, if St. John's wort is being raised purely for profit, you know, are they using harmful herbicides or pesticides in order to be more profitable? Are they being raised in a country where DDT may be sprayed to kill the caterpillars that eat on the plant? Those are the kinds of issues that also have to come into play, as well as during the manufacture, are they actually putting St. John's wort in the capsule, and as opposed to what they sweep up off the floor? Mm-hmm. I mean, so you know, those are significant concerns, and they don't really go against what I think the Congress's intent was in reducing the regulation or the regulatory need to prove efficacy, but they certainly go to safety and even to a certain extent whether there's fraud.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point, Mike, and I'm so glad you called in. It is true, safety and efficacy are two entirely different matters. They're both very important. The short list of what these new rules cover when they go into effect next summer are identity, purity, strength, and composition. So as Mike pointed out, if it says it's St. John's wort, up until now it's been sort of like, well, what is St. John's wort and is it really in there or isn't it in there? It's been a real mess. So now at least there's going to be a kind of a legal requirement that indeed if it's St. John's wort, that has to be what's in that pill, and the contaminants have to be monitored, and so that's the purity part. And then so all those pieces go together as to what's in the current good manufacturing practices rules. And if your listeners are interested, actually FDA has some very good information on their website. And I actually had Jim put a link on Larry Mueller's website. Mm-hmm. So that people could click on it, so I don't have to read the long list over the air. It would be pretty hard to read it to take you right to the documents. But if you you could also just go to www.fda.gov. That's mm-hmm. fda.gov.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into their little search box, you could type in dietary supplement, good manufacturing practices, and that would also be a way to get there.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your call very much. Evelyn in Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi. I'm so excited to be on your program.
Thanks for calling.
I have a couple comments. One is I'm a firm believer in supplements, but it's never, you know, just one thing. You have to eat right, and you have to exercise and get enough sleep, too. The one thing, though, that is interesting is that there is a comparative guide to nutritional supplements put out by a Canadian by the name of Lyle McWilliam, and because, you know, the Canadians seem to be more interested in preventing disease than we do, and he has a lot of these supplements evaluated, and the one that is very, very good that is made according to pharmaceutical standards is USANA Health Sciences.
Well, I'm first of all, my response to that is I would always double check with another expert source.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I brought a book with me, Larry, that I just got because mm-hmm. it's a newly revised edition. It's actually written for health professionals, but I think informed consumers like Evelyn could also, take advantage of the information in this book. It's a health professional's guide to popular dietary supplements. It's the third edition, and it just came out from the American Dietetic Association. And you can also actually look up in here various supplements you're thinking of taking, and it gives you the pros and cons and what it's supposed to be good for and how good the evidence is and that sort of thing. As far as commenting on specific companies, first of all, I'm not familiar with this specific company. And even if I was, I think we don't want to have a radio show about which companies are reliable and which ones aren't. That would involve a different guest and a different way of getting into this topic. But I do appreciate Evelyn pointing out that supplements don't make up for the other very two important things to do to take care of your health, and that is eating right. And I'm so glad she mentioned getting enough sleep. You know, I meet so many people that are, you know, they just, if they haven't had 3 cups of strong coffee in the morning, they can't even think because they're really trying to function without getting
enough sleep.
And, you know, if you have a new baby in the house, you could understand why. But it's almost become sort of a thing we take for granted that somehow you can kind of push yourself too far. And I think all of these, getting enough exercise is another part of that equation. And if you're under a lot of stress, really being very knowledgeable and purposeful about how you handle your stress and how you deal with it, I think all of those things together really are important. And dietary supplements might help a little bit, but they're not going to make up for a serious problem in any of those other areas.
Yeah. Sue Nitzke, our guest today, UW Extension nutritional scientist. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about supplements today on the program and some of the new FDA regulations that will be going into effect regarding supplement manufacturers to follow good manufacturing practices. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension nutritional scientist, our guest. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Susan in Krakow next. Susan, hi.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question here has to do with, okay, the vitamins are basically, the majority of them are manufactured in China and India. Niacin is manufactured in Switzerland. A lot of it's manufactured out of the country due to the companies and the pollution factor. And they're just basically put together here in the United States. And most of this information came from a book called The Twinkie Deconstructed, where he actually went to all these plants. And that's why there was probably lead in some of these vitamins, et cetera, et cetera. But so how does, I mean, the manufacturing on this end, okay, they're just putting items together when it's coming from a source that is probably going to have some bad qualities with them because they're not made here. They're actually just put together here. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right.
You know, I'm so glad Susan called in with that point. You know, recently there's the concerns over food products imported from China and other things have gotten more attention.
Yes.
And the first thing that came to my mind is, oh, wow, you know, because just about whether you pay $1,000 a week for your supplements or $2 for a little bottle from the normal drugstore, their generic brand, chances are most of the vitamins in there were produced in China. They do have a corner on the market for the manufacturer's source. So I think this is a good point. I'm not totally sure what a consumer can do about it other than ask a lot of questions of the manufacturer and the person who or company that is selling the supplement about what they do to monitor the ultimate producer of the product that's in their pills or potions so that they can feel pretty confident that they're not getting something they don't want, like lead.
Yeah, that's and with all the publicity about the food business in China, I'm sure it's got to.
Well, you know, one of them turned out to be a hoax. The thing about the cardboard in the buns, I don't know if you read that one or not. That was, I heard about that one from a couple of different sources, and I thought, wow, how could they even make that taste like a bun? And then a few days later, actually it was reported in the British news that that whole thing was...
Well, that part of it was a hoax, at least.
Yeah, but, I mean, the pet food things and some of those others are real, but even with that kind of issue, you have to be careful. Is this, like, really too weird to be true? And in one case, it was.
Joya in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Joya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for you, guest, whether she can make her comment about the vitamin B12 and vitamin B complex as a nutritional supplement in the senior citizens group, because I'm a senior citizen, and what I'm reading about is that helps to preserve the memory and many other stress conditions.
Hmm. Did you say B complex or D?
B.
Okay.
B as in boy.
Yeah. Okay. Let me give a fairly simple answer to a complicated question that I'm being a professor, I would love to talk for an hour in response. There are some conditions where most mainstream experts have agreed that supplements can be useful, and I just brought a list of those with me. First of all, if you don't consume a variety of foods or if you're eating under 1,200 calories a day, it's pretty hard to meet all the recommendations for vitamins and minerals. My response to that is first try to eat a better variety of foods. But nonetheless, that could be a condition that would cause you to need just a regular multivitamin would be fine for that. Calcium, folic acid, and iron are recommended for pregnant women. And I also might mention that there is one vitamin that you have to be careful of if you're pregnant, and that is vitamin A. Mm. It's absolutely essential for the development of the fetus, and it's a wonderful nutrient, but you should take it in the form of beta carotene, not preformed vitamin A, like vitamin A acetate or palmitate, because you can overdose and actually harm the fetus with too much preformed vitamin A. The next on the list is folic acid, and that's for women who are pregnant or about to become pregnant or even all childbearing years. And that's because it helps prevent a very prevalent kind of birth defect. And that's why it's also present in fortified grains. So you may be able to get enough folic acid if you're eating fortified grains. Let's see. Iron for women with heavy menstrual periods. Basically, iron for women who are anemic. Then it's for older adults, people over 50. It's calcium, vitamin D, D like dog, and vitamin B12. The calcium and vitamin D, not just for bones, but for a number of other conditions. It's even being shown to be helpful for things like preventing certain kinds of cancer and that sort of thing. So for older adults, the official recommendation are calcium, vitamin D, and vitamin B12. And if you're on a very low-fat diet, meaning that you have hardly any fat in your diet, especially hardly any fat from vegetable sources, it's recommended that you take vitamin E. That's E like elephant. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't have any dairy products, you should either use a calcium supplement or use calcium-fortified foods. Like if you're using soy milk instead of regular cow's milk, you might be able to get your calcium and maybe even your calcium and vitamin D from the soy milk if it's fortified, but you need to check the label. And then strict vegetarians, people who are not just people who don't eat red meat, but people who are really not eating anything from any animal's origins, no milk, no eggs, no cheese, no fish, that sort of vegetarian, they should really check their diets and make sure they're getting enough calcium, iron, zinc, and B12. And then one last thing that's kind of controversial, smokers should stop smoking, but if they're going to keep smoking, they should at least talk to their doctor about whether or not they need some vitamin C.
And I've seen, just going back to the calcium for a minute, I was looking at some of the labels on some of the supplements in the store, and I see now that at least one company is putting out a calcium supplement that also has vitamin D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of them in the...
Many of them do that now?
Right. I don't know if we want to know what I do, but because I'm over 50, I do take calcium now and then. I also use dairy products. But I make sure I take it with pick out the one that has vitamin D. And if... look for actually vitamin D in the form that's called vitamin D3. That's the number 3. There are different forms of vitamin D, and vitamin D3 is the most recommended and effective, according to Neil Binkley from our medical school, who's an expert in this area.
All right.
Question? Mm-hmm. Does vitamin B12 has any impact on the prevention of Alzheimer's?
Well, it's been studied, and some studies show it might have a weak benefit, and other studies show it doesn't help. So I'm sorry, I don't really have a definitive answer to that. I wouldn't count on it. Mm. A lack of vitamin B12 in the diet can cause sort of a mental confusion, and whether that's actually a different form of kind of a dementia that just complicates issues, or whether it actually contributes to the development of Alzheimer's, I think they're probably two separate issues, but the research isn't real clear on that.
Hmm.
Vitamin B12 comes only from animal foods. In other words, you have to have a liver to produce vitamin B12. So if you're consuming animal foods, you are probably getting enough vitamin B12, but as people age, their ability to get the vitamin B12 out of the food and into your blood is compromised. Mm. So you can, you know, if you have good health care and a good physician who will work with you, you could actually ask for a blood test and see if you're a little low in B12 or not. But as a general recommendation for the public, they say, yeah, if you're over 50, for many people, it's a good idea to take calcium, vitamin D, and vitamin B12.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry in Green Bay, it's your turn next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, guys. Great show here.
Thank you.
I had a question for your guest. I've been taking supplements for quite a few years, actually. My mother used to give me one a day when I was probably 5 years old. But anyhow, I've been taking L-lysine for quite a few years. I heard it was good for cold sores, and it does seem to help. You know, I don't get them anymore very often, but is there any side effects or harm that can be done by L-lysine and mixing it with any other supplements or long-term use or anything?
Okay.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because lysine is an amino acid, and we've been sort of talking about vitamins. The definition of dietary supplements is much broader than vitamin and minerals, and it also includes amino acids and herbs and botanicals and extracts, and just about anything that wants to call itself a dietary supplement can pretty much figure out a way to meet that. Even a lot of beverages now that you're finding in the store, if they're supposed to be like, you know, energy boosters or that sort of thing. What I tell people is look at the label, and if it's labeled with its nutrient or herbal composition in a box called supplement facts, then it's being marketed as a supplement and it follows those rules. If it has a label like a regular beverage would have that says nutrition facts, then it's just regulated as part of the food supply. I'm looking in that book that I recommended earlier, the Popular Dietary Supplements, and it says that the media and marketing claims are that it stops the growth of herpes virus and canker sores, and it enhances calcium absorption. And it says, research is conflicting.
Nah.
Sorry. On the role of lysine in treating herpes simplex infection, dietary protein intake and lysine to arginine, that's another amino acid ratios, were not controlled in any of the studies, although subjects were instructed to avoid arginine-rich foods. The amount supplemented in these studies was comparable to an amount that can be obtained from the diet. Although more research is needed, people hate to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
On the potential role of lysine against herpes infection, these patients can be encouraged to increase consumption of lysine-rich foods, which is basically protein-rich foods, within the context of an overall healthful diet. Preliminary animal studies and one human trial suggest that lysine enhances calcium absorption and retention. Controlled clinical trials are needed, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. So
yeah.
In other words, sorry, it may or may not work.
The coin's in the air, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way of looking at it.
Okay, well, it seemed to help my cold sores over the last 10 years or so.
Well, and, you know, that points out what happens with a lot of dietary supplements. If it seems to work for you, as long as you're not out telling the whole world, take this lysine, I just know it's the best thing in the world. It is an amino acid, so it's not all that strange of a ingredient, as long as you take it from a safe source.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
As the book I was just reading from points out, it's also in your food. So whether the extra lysine from a supplement helps or not remains to be proven.
All right. Thanks, Jared.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Betty in Waukesha, your turn now. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I appreciate this program. I have read recently in the Christian Science Monitor that China has control of about 80% of vitamin C, and they spoke of it as a as an additive. Does that mean the vitamin C that's used for, say, preservatives in sausages and things like that, or is it all of vitamin C, and how did that come about? I haven't read the entire article, I have to confess, but it seems...
I haven't seen the article that you're referring to, and actually vitamin C is pretty easy to make. Back in my freshman chemistry course, we actually made vitamin C as, just to show kids how to get started in chemistry. But I would think it's reasonable to expect that a lot of the vitamin C that's used in food manufacturing and in supplements comes from China. But you could ask the manufacturer for verification if you'd mm-hmm. like to know that.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling. If you'd like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 as we talk supplements today with Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. Let's go to Rachel in Menominee next. Rachel, hi to you.
Hi. My question for your guest was about eventually vitamins perhaps becoming prescription only. I know with the range of things that can be patented, as that's growing, I just wonder if eventually vitamins will reach the point of other medications where they require a prescription, and then would this then limit the range of people who could have these supplements available to them? And I can take my answer out here.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Rachel, for bringing that up. Back in the days when the rules that are in effect became rules, which was in the 1990s, the people who manufacture dietary supplements really rallied their forces and got people all upset by the fact that Congress was passing rules about dietary supplements and told people that, you know, the FDA is trying to take away your supplements or make them available only by prescription, and you're not going to be able to, you know, take care of your own health and la, la, la. And that was really unfair, misleading, and I think totally unscrupulous. I doubt that most people are interested in changing vitamins to being available by prescription only. There are categories in between, however, where there could be stricter standards and more proof required that this, first of all, does any good, or second of all, you know, here's all the things that we do to monitor and guarantee its safety. Both in the publishing the regulations and then enforcing them. That's sort of both of those things have to happen together. And I think if you're reading that people are trying to change vitamins to only being able to be available by prescription, you're probably reading something from someone who's trying to keep the regulations as loose as possible.
Okay. Richard in Lake Tomahawk, on to you now. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm currently taking glucosamine and chondroitin, and I was wondering if, because it says sulfate on it, that if I'm to be on a salt-restricted diet, should I not be taking that?
Well, I think you're talking about two different issues. I don't think whether or not you should be on a salt-restricted diet is affected all that much by whether or not you're taking glucosamine. I will say that for a while, you know, I have a little bit of arthritis in my hands, and mm-hmm. for a while I was actually thinking of taking glucosamine. The National Institutes of Health actually sponsored a very large study to try to decide whether glucosamine with or without chondroitin was effective for arthritis. And at first there was some sort of preliminary evidence that showed that one or the other of those two supplements might be helpful. But as more and more of this evidence is coming in and the long-term results of taking those supplements are being monitored, to me the evidence is very weak for any benefits. So, personally, I don't take it. You're certainly free to take it, but I would talk with your healthcare provider. There can be some safety issues, especially if you're taking other drugs. you know, it's just really kind of complicated. And the reason why you need to have advice from somebody who's really knowledgeable, especially if you have a condition that requires this kind of treatment, you're probably taking some other medications for the pain or for prevention of the condition getting worse. And you really want to make sure that you're not sort of taking two substances that either can decrease the effectiveness of the other or increase the effectiveness of the other or have some kind of interaction that you weren't counting on.
Okay. Mm.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. And you can join in. We still have some time at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You mentioned adverse effects one way or another. If you have adverse effects. The problem, I think, in some cases is knowing, you know, you become ill or something and recognizing that it might have been a supplement. That would be one thing. But if you have adverse effects, what do you do?
Oh, that's a very good question. The Food and Drug Administration does have a tracking system. It's called the MedWatch program. And they're really encouraging people to report if they think they've had what they call an adverse effect from not just supplements, but any kind of medication.
Mm-hmm.
There's an 800 number that you can call. It's 800-FDA-1088.
1088.
Right. It's the FDA's MedWatch program, 800-FDA-1088. And they also have a website, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to FDA.gov and search for it, or it's called FDA.gov/MedWatch/How, HOW.htm.
And Joe in Duluth, Minnesota, will give you a shot. Hi,
Good
Joe.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is a very interesting conversation. Some years ago, when we used to have a woman's page in our local newspaper, the state of Minnesota dietitians had the state meeting in Duluth. And in the course of the meeting, one of the newspaper people interviewed the president of the association, and of course she hammered pretty hard on the supplements and the vitamins and the rest of it, and said that the health food industry as a whole was ripping the public off to the tune of $500 million, $500 million. And at that time I checked it, our food bill at that time was $100 billion. So this would be half of 1%. Following week, a letter to the editor said this: thank you for exposing the ripoff. If it hadn't been for those people, we could each family have two more cartons of cigarettes and two more cases of beer. Now, my point is that there are all too many people with evidence of their individual use, and I found over the years that my patients exhibited a great deal more information on nutrition than I ever recorded them until I had a chance to speak with them.
Well, I think Joe brings up an important point that maybe we should make sure everybody understands, and that this is a multi-billion-dollar business. And it's one of the reasons it's become political as well as scientific in what these regulations do and do not cover and how they're enforced, et cetera. So I think if there's one thing I just want people to make sure they remember, and that is that there are special rules governing dietary supplements. They now have a new feature that's about to go into effect that at least establishes what's called current good manufacturing practices. But it's not a guarantee that you can take any supplement you want without being careful. The words natural don't mean anything. There are a lot of wonderful sounding claims that manufacturers make that are just basically marketing words. Mm-hmm. So you just really have to be careful. And please, please, please find a trusted source, somebody who's not selling you a product, to verify the claims if you have any doubts at all.
Always a pleasure, Sue. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Sue Nitzke, UW-Madison and Extension Professor of Nutritional Sciences. Always a pleasure to have her with us. And we'll have her back and do this again. And frankly, to some extent, our topic coming up certainly relates to what we've just been talking about with supplements and so forth. We'll be talking about how you can lower your risk of needing a nursing home. John Narica, Executive Director of Oakwood Village Continuing Care Retirement Communities in Madison. Our guest coming up now on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.